Let's continue our story about Gideon by turning to Judges chapter 6, verse number 33. Now, the basic story of Gideon is this. He's living during the time of the Midianite oppression. The Midianites sweep into the Promised Land pretty much every year in the summer and take the produce of so many of the Israelis that are either in the breadbasket of the north, which would be the Jezreel and Megiddo Valley region, and the areas on either side of that, to the north and to the south. Manasseh, the home tribe of Gideon, is Manasseh. And I think I gave the wrong place for his hometown last time that we talked about this. There are more than one Ophrah. The Ophrah I identified is down a little bit farther south in the edge of the tribe of Benjamin's territory. The Ophrah in Manasseh, there's a little bit of debate about it as to exactly where it's at, but it seems to be somewhere near Shechem. And Shechem is a very important story, city, in the next story of Gideon that we'll be telling. But anyway, Gideon has been called by God through angelic intervention to be the new judge. And judges always start their responsibilities by ending the subjugation that is currently going on because of the sin of the Israeli people. The timeout, as we would say, is over, and it's now time for the troublemakers that God allowed to come in to be put out. So we start reading about the Gideon victory in Judges 6:33. Now, all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east came together, and they crossed the Jordan and encamped in the valley of Jezreel. Now, Midianites are the chief problem causer in this, but they have allies in the Amalekites and these peoples of the east, which may include the Ammonites and perhaps the Moabites as co-conspirators in plundering the Israelis at harvest time each and every year. So verse 34 reports that the spirit of he who is clothed Gideon, and he sounded the trumpet, and the Abiezrites were called out to follow him. So this is a way of describing how the Holy Spirit gave Gideon this supernatural ability to function as the leader of this militia force that's being gathered. Now, his home area people are the first ones that gather around him. He is from the tribal clan of Abiezer. And so his local guys, they're on top of it. And then he needs to gather even more to get in on this issue. So he sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, so that's his home tribe, and they too were called out to follow him. And he sent messengers to Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali, and they went up to meet him. So those guys are on the north side of the Jezreel Valley in the Megiddo Plain. So he's gathering everybody that's closest to where these invading armies are. Then Gideon said to God, "If you will save Israel by my hand, as you've said, behold, I am laying a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there is dew on the fleece alone, and it's dry on all the ground, then I shall know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said." This is where we discover Gideon is still a little bit nervous, a little bit concerned about his role of taking on this huge army of the invading horde. So he asked God for a sign. And we even have grabbed this phrase, putting out a fleece, to mean checking in with God and asking him for some sort of sign about what we're supposed to do. Now, I'm going to tell you that I'm a little bit nervous with making this a Christian principle of laying out a fleece. Because in this instance, God has already told Gideon what he should do. And he has given him a supernatural sign that this is to be done. Remember, the angel ignited the offering meal of Gideon on the day that he was given his assignment and then disappeared. That was a supernatural sign that should have been sufficient. So Gideon is actually showing a little bit of faithlessness by asking for an additional sign. And so I would caution Christians, if you know what is the right thing to do, you don't need a sign from God. Just get it done. And the scripture tells us so many things that we're supposed to be doing, and we don't need to lay a fleece out about those things. All right, so the sign is supposed to be that when he gets up the next morning, it would be typical that there'd be dew on the ground. But he wants it to be dry on the ground and dew on the fleece only. So verse 38, God kindly gives him this sign. It was so. When he rose early next morning and squeezed the fleece, he wrung out enough dew from the fleece to fill a bowl with water. Then Gideon said to God, "Let not your anger burn against me." So already, he kind of knows that he's pushing things. "Let me speak just once more. Please let me test just once more with the fleece. Please let it be dry on the fleece only, and on all the ground let there be dew." So he lays the fleece out a second time because he's still hesitant. And so again, I caution Christians, don't be this way. When you know, particularly from Scripture, what the right thing to do is, just do it. You don't need to ask God for some sort of sign that you need to do the right thing. But God is kind and patient with Gideon. God did so that night, and it was dry in the fleece only, and on all the ground there was dew. So that is very unusual, both situations. So he should be absolutely positive now that he is on the right track with this mission. Chapter number 7. Then Yerub-Baal, remember that is his nickname. It means let Baal contend for himself. That is Gideon. And all the people who were with him rose early and encamped beside the spring of Harod. Now, this spring is a little bit east of the ancient city of Jezreel. And it's kind of just in the edge of the valley of Jezreel as you're coming out of the hill country of Manasseh into the plain of Jezreel or the valley of Jezreel. So this is where he puts his troops, just barely in the valley. And then it says, and the camp of Midian was north of them by the hill of Morah in the valley. Now the hill of Morah is about 4, maybe 5 miles to the north, slightly west of this spring of Harod. And it's very prominent on the landscape, and that is where this huge horde of Midianites and their allied forces are gathering. Now, how big are they? Well, casualty figures that we pick up later let us know there's about 134,000 foot soldiers in this Midianite encampment. That's massive. And he who is said to Gideon, "The people with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hand, lest Israel boast over me, saying, 'My own hand has saved me.'" So God comes to Midian again, probably in a dream, maybe in a vision, and says, "Midian, or Gideon, you've got way too many guys that you've called up." Now, he's got several thousands of these foot soldiers, these militia members that he's called out. But God says, "That's way too many. You need to pare down your forces because I don't want you guys later saying that you got it done by your own strength. I want it obvious that I'm the one that gave the victory. So continuing in verse 3, "Now therefore proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whoever is fearful and trembling, let him return home and hurry away from Mount Gilead." Then 22,000 of the people returned and 10,000 remained. So we find out from that he actually had 32,000 Israelis come out for the call. Now that's a pretty small group compared to the huge horde that they're facing. But God says that's too many. You need to thin them out. Now, anytime the Israelis were gathered as a militia force, they were supposed to excuse from service anyone who had recently married, anyone who had recently planted a vineyard, anyone who had recently built a house, and anyone who was just afraid to be there. So God zeroes in on that last one and says, you need to dismiss those that don't really want to be here. And more than two-thirds of these guys leave. They don't want to be in the fight. And that's fine. But you would think that 10,000, that'd be scary enough going up against the huge group. But the Lord said to Gideon, the people are still too many. So you've still got way too many guys so that you might have this weird idea that you did it by your own strength. So God gives us special instruction. Take them down to the water, that is down to the spring, and I will test them for you there. And any one of whom I say to you, this one shall go with you, shall go with you. And any one of whom I say to you, this one shall not go with you, shall not go with you. So he brought the people down to the water. Now, I get the impression that he basically said, all right, guys, we're going to take a real quick run around and end up down by the water supply where everybody can get a drink. And so he runs them. It's probably summertime. It's nice and hot there in the Jezreel Valley at this time of year. And everybody's ready for a drink once they arrive. And that's what God uses as the sign of sorting the people out. Here's the instructions. He who is said to Gideon, everyone who laps the water with his tongue as a dog laps, you shall set him by himself. Likewise, everyone who kneels down to drink. And the number of those who lapped, putting their hands to their mouths, was 300 men. But all the rest of the people knelt down to drink water. And he who is said to Gideon, with the 300 men who lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hand, and let all the others go, every man to his home. Now, there is a lot of commentary discussion about how it is that God utilized this dividing sign. I am going to give you my personal opinion, which is shared by others. The difference between the two is that one group, the larger group, it'd be 9,700. As soon as they were arrived at the water and they were all hot and sweaty, they got down on their knees and put their faces right down to the water and started slurping up water. Now, in my opinion, that does not show good attention to your environment. It's not showing awareness of your situation. You're not paying attention. So they are the inattentive ones. And remember, these guys are not professional soldiers. They're farmers. They're wranglers of cattle and sheep. They're tradesmen. They are only called out from time to time as militia members. And so these guys, the largest group, show that they're not really paying attention to what's going on around them. The guys that kind of squatted down and got a handful of water and brought it up to their mouth and slurped it up like a dog would be lapping, and then repeated the process, They were keeping their eyes on the horizon. They were keeping their heads up and their heads on a swivel, as we would say. So they were attentive. And those are the types of guys that you would want to take into a combat situation. And so that is the reason why I think God picked these guys. Verse number 8, so the people took provisions in their hands and their trumpets, and he sent all the rest of the Israel, every man to his tent, but retained the 300 men. And the camp of Midian was below him in the valley. Now that last phrase, that last line there, tells me that the 300 guys under Gideon's command have now moved northward across the Jezreel Valley and snuck around and got up on the hill of Moreh. Because now they're up above the huge encampment of the Midianites that are just at the foot of the hill of Moreh. And this is the last staging point for the assault that Gideon is going to make on this massively huge camp. Now, that same night, verse 9 says, so the sun's gone down and it's dark. And I think it may be that they moved during the hours of darkness. So that same night, he who is said to him, probably while he was trying to sleep, arise, go down against the camp, for I have given it into your hand. But if you are afraid to go down to the camp with Purah, your servant, and you shall hear what they say, and afterward your hand shall be strengthened to go down against the camp. So Gideon may not be able to sleep all that well. God speaks to him one last time, tells him, all right, Gideon, you're going to go down and you're going to take in on this encampment shortly. If you're still nervous, you take a little bit of a sneak down the hill, just to the edge of their perimeter guards. And you listen in, and that'll give you the confidence to follow through with what I'm telling you to do. So what did they do? He went down with Purah, his servant, to the outposts of the armed men who were in the camp. All military encampments, when they're following proper procedure, put picket guards out at the fringe to give early warning of any movement by the enemy. So you've got a couple of guys that are on guard duty in the middle of the night. Verse number 12. The Midianites and the Amalekites and all the people of the east lay along the valley like locusts in abundance, and their camels were without number, as the sand that is on the seashore in abundance. And when Gideon came, behold, a man was telling a dream to his comrade. And he said, behold, I dreamed a dream. And behold, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the camp of Midian and came to the tent and struck it so that it fell and turned it upside down so that the tent lay flat. So you've got one guard talking to probably his tent mate. And he says, guy, I had this really weird dream earlier. We were in our tent and suddenly this gigantic barley loaf comes rolling off the mountain. And it comes down and it runs over our tent and it runs over all the tents and all the tents get knocked everywhere. Now his comrade answered, oh, this is no other than the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, the man of Israel. God has given into his hand Midian and all the camp. So he gives his interpretation of the dream, which tells us that Gideon has already got a bit of a reputation. He's apparently been doing some sort of activities already and has gotten under the skin of the Midianites as a dangerous guy. And so this other guy on guard duty says, you know what I'm afraid of? I'm afraid your dream is about that Gideon fellow. The gods And the plural here, by the way, would probably indicate he's thinking about his own gods. The gods have given into his hand Midian and all the camp. So once Gideon hears that, he knows that God's scaring these guys even with dreams. So verse 15, as soon as Gideon heard the telling of the dream and its interpretation, he worshiped. So he worshiped God. He thanked God for showing him this. And he returned to the camp of Israel and said, arise, for he who is has given the host of Midian into your hand. So Gideon knows now is the time. And God has given him a plan of attack, and it's time to put it into place. So he divided the 300 men into three companies, so three groups of 100. He put trumpets into the hands of all of them, which is unusual. Typically, there would only be a trumpeter for every significantly large operating group within an army, because trumpets are signal devices, communication devices. So a trumpet is only needed to move a certain group of people in a certain fashion with different signals. But these guys, every last one of them receives a trumpet. And he gave them empty jars with torches inside the jars. Now, the jars are not the typical jars that you would see for holding grain or some sort of liquid. These jars are specifically designed to keep lit torches readily available, but not giving too much light. And the way you do that is you would have little air holes that have been drilled or formed into the sides of the jar. It probably has some sort of carrying handle on it. So this is the way that they will be able to carry a lit torch that's very low light into their operation zone and then bring it out at just the right time. The jars will also come in handy for making a great big scary noise too. Verse number 17, he said to them, look at me and do likewise. When I come to the outskirts of the camp, do as I do. So he's the guy that's going to give the signal, and he's told them what he wants them to do, but he wants them to follow his lead in the procedure. Verse number 18, when I blow the trumpet, I and all who are with me then blow the trumpets also on every side of all the camp and shout, for he who is and for Gideon. And so this is the way that they're going to begin the assault. Verse number 19, so Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, when they had just set the watch. All right, so I did say middle of the night a while ago. That probably was a poor choice. The watches began at sunset and ended at sunrise, so you divided the night into three watches of roughly 4 hours each. Just for the sake of using our clock system, the first watch would run from 6 to 10. The next watch would run from 10 to 2 a.m. And the last watch would be from 2 a.m. until 6 a.m. So the middle watch begins right around 10 a.m. So the sun has basically been down a few hours. The camp is supposed to be winding down and have gone to bed so that they could be up in 8 hours at dawn in order to do their work. So this changing of the guard at the beginning of the middle watch is one of the times that the camp is going to feel most likely that everything is okay. So that's when they're going to hit them. And Gideon's got his 100 guys. They're probably in the middle group. And then there's another group of 100 off to one side, another group of 100 off to the other side. They're probably spread out in lines. And Then comes the signal. They blew the trumpets and smashed the jars that were in their hands. So the smashing of the pottery makes this huge noise, and it allows now for the guy to have an uncovered torch lifted up. And again, in a typical warfare situation, they don't fight at night. But if they needed to, only one of every few soldiers would be having a torch. Because why would you need multiple torches lighting the exact same area? So the blowing of the trumpets, the smashing of the jars, and the lifting up of the torches is going to look and sound and feel to the enemy as if they are being overrun by a massive assault group at night when they weren't ready for it. So verse 20, the three companies blew the trumpet and broke the jars. They held in their left hand the torches and in their right hand the trumpets to blow. Notice nobody has their sword pulled yet. So this is all making a huge noise, and they cried out, "A sword for he who is, and for Gideon!" And this is all it takes to convince the Midianites and their allies that they're being surrounded and invaded by this massive force of Israelis. Every man stood in his place around the camp, and all the army ran. They cried, and they fled. When they blew the 300 trumpets, he who is set every man's sword against his comrade and against all the army. So the Midianites, they're just waking up. They don't have torches lit all over the place in their encampment. They're not in their armor. They grab the sword that's probably near them, and they're just flailing around in the semi-dark and attacking anything that moves, which in this case is going to be all their own guys, because the Israelis have not moved into the encampment yet. They're on the fringes. And so this is where we have to stop today, and we will pick up the rest of the story of Gideon's victory the next time we get into the Word.